Welcome to Chodesh Tov, a monthly podcast which is a joint venture of the Schechter Rabbinical School in Jerusalem, the Ziegler School for Rabbinic Studies in Los Angeles, the Jewish Theological Seminary of New York, and the International Rabbinical Assembly. Once each month, different faculty members present a podcast on the most recent research, cutting-edge developments, and courage thinking in their specific academic fields. The purpose of this program is to keep our membership regularly informed about the most current thinking in various fields of Jewish study. Chodesh Tov.
Shalom. This is Dr. Doron Bar, a senior lecturer in the Land of Israel Studies MA program at the Schechter Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. This year, I'm happy to be teaching a course on Jerusalem as a city holy to the three monotheistic religions to the JTS rabbinical students studying for the year in Jerusalem at the Schechter Rabbinical Seminary. Today, I will be discussing a subject that continues to make headings: the status of the Western Wall as a Jewish holy site since the Six-Day War. Ever since 1967, Israeli society has been preoccupied with the question of the status and the meaning of the Western Wall. For over 40 years since the Six-Day War, many struggles and dilemmas connected to this holy site were created. The usual view that has developed is that the religious establishment determines the flavor of the site. Repeated attempts by the Israeli government and other bodies to inject national content into the Old City, the Jewish Quarter, and even the Western Wall have generally failed. Although the Israeli flag flies in the center of the plaza in front of the wall, IDF young soldiers are sworn at the site, and the opening ceremony of the Memorial Day for the fallen soldiers is held there, the Rabbi of the Wall and the Holy Places has rejected all attempts to alter the religious aspect of the place as fashioned by him and his predecessors. Members of other streams of Judaism are often prevented from holding prayer services in their preferred style, and the separation between men and women and frustration of strict modesty strictures has intensified. The opening of the religious historical site, such as the Wall Tunnel, the Chain of Generations, and the Wall Heritage Center, all testify to the increasing religiousization of the Wall at the expense of its Israelness. With the formation of the Zionist movement in its increasing activity in the Land of Israel, the question of the movement's attitude to the holiness of the land, especially Jerusalem, its holy places, and the Western Wall became more prominent. The Zionists preferred to concentrate on settling and redeeming the land and were selective in their use of its aspect of holiness. When Theodor Herzl visited Jerusalem in 1898, he envisioned the Old City without political ownership, belonging to the all nations as a center of faith, love, and science. He wanted Jewish Jerusalem to develop outside of the realm of the holy, placing less emphasis on aspects of its holiness. "My heart cannot feel deep emotion," he wrote of his visit to the Wall. Despite the inclination of many Zionist leaders to avoid attaching great importance to Jerusalem, the Western Wall nevertheless became central to Jewish Hebrew discourse, especially against the background of the national struggle between Arabs and Jews in those years. The leadership of the state in making strived to ignore the earthy physical Jerusalem and focused on the symbolic value of the heavenly, spiritually one. But this quickly evaporated when the British established Jerusalem, as the capital of Palestine Israel. Zionist leaders were forced to take stand regarding the Wall, which was the site of several violent eruptions by Arabs against Jews, as a holy place, and to defend the Jews' freedom to worship there. Following the capture of the Old City by the IDF on the third day of the Six-Day War, a stream of Israeli public officials made their way to the Western Wall. The many visitors to the Wall in those hours came out of authentic religious yearning to touch the stones of the Wall and to pray there, as well as being politically motivated. There was an inner competition among leaders who took part in the preparation for the war and in the battle itself. If until 1967 Jewish prayer at the Wall was conducted under the auspices of foreign rule and in the midst of dispute with Muslim residents, the radically different reality came about after the war. The Western Wall was now under Israeli rule, allowing the state to renovate the area both physically and symbolically. Even before the war ended, as the public came in waves to the old city and to the wall, a quick decision was made by the military governor of Jerusalem municipality officials to transform the site to accommodate masses of people. Only 4 days after the war ended, bulldozers were at work, systematically destroying many of the 150 Mughrabi homes next to the wall in order to build a plaza. Prior to the 1948 war, Jews had to make do with the narrow strip of few square meters in front of the wall. Now an expansive area of several dunams was created. On Shavuot 1967, a crowd of over 2,000 people gathered on the new plaza by the wall. For most, either young native Israelis or new immigrants, it was the first time they were seeing it. Large numbers of people continued to flock to the wall after Shavuot, and the renewed ritual activity plus the lack of clear rules for services created confusion that highlighted the need for established order at the place. Suggestions, some of them quite strange, were put forth by the redesign of the physical space, the establishment of prayer services procedures. These included covering the plaza with carpeting and requiring visitors to approach barefoot, erecting a tower decorated with symbols of Jewish history to commemorate fallen soldiers, and adding a row of black stone to the top of the wall upon which important events and disasters in Jewish history would be remembered. The mixed crowd, of which included many secular people to whom a visit to the holy places was not a familiar routine, did not know exactly how to behave at the site. In an effort to guide the people in the rules of acceptable behavior, newspaper ads appeared and specifically specified proper conduct at the holy places and especially at the Western Wall. The mingling of sanctified and profane created an unusual situation that promoted direct criticism from many sources. Even before 1967, Professor Yoshua Leibovich criticized the development of a cultic activity at the holy sites. Following the war, when public interest in the matter grew, he called for dispensing with all the holy places, including the Western Wall. He labeled the wall as Diskotel, proposing that the plaza in front be converted to a divine disco, the country's largest discotheque. The Western Wall, others noted with sarcasm, had turned into a lot with a wall, a huge piazza del popolo that is dotted with police barriers, temporary shacks, tzedakah boxes, black nylons, and cars belonging to big shots with special permits. Others added their protest, saying, "This is an outdoor synagogue that provides business for photographers, beggars, tefillin salesmen, and Jews praying for other Jews for money. It is a noisy, dirty picnic area." The Ministry of Religious Affairs, responsible for the Western Wall, has taken certain steps that have caused a storm of protest among many Israelis. Most criticism was raised against the separation barrier between men and women, which allots an area for male worshippers 4 times the size of the woman's prayer area. During the 30-day or so period that the Western Wall was under the control of the military rabbinate, there was no such separation, and prayer, like everything else that took place at the wall, was mixed. The Mechitza barrier that was erected afterwards was the first. Earlier, towards the end of the Ottoman rule and during the Mandate period, there had been attempts to separate the sexes at the wall, but these failed mainly due to the strong objections by the British, who opposed any change to the status quo. Transforming the Western Wall into a synagogue caused tremendous bitterness. The Haaretz daily newspaper wrote, "Who decides that the Western Wall is strictly a religious site? Isn't it a national historical relic?" Among many groups in today's society, a separation barrier is unacceptable. Prime Minister Levi Eshkol preferred to the separation areas as pans, making the Michitza a political issue and battleground between Israeli political parties and the religious establishment. In response, the Ministry of Religious Affairs overcame its strength and relationship with the chief rabbinate to explain that only chief rabbis may set the rules for the Western Wall. and that since the wall is a holy place and a house of prayer, male and female worshippers must be kept separated. They claimed, among other things, that just as in the temple there was a separation between the sexes, so should be an chitza at the wall. To sum up, the argument over the fundamental nature of the Western Wall and the right of all Israelis, religious and secular alike, to have a share in the place and identify it with symbolism began in the days and hours after the war. As soon as the last shot ceased to echo and silence returned, the site became problematic and posed a challenge. The problem did not exist prior to 1948. The Western Wall then occupied a marginal place in the Zionist world, among both leaders of Jewish residents of the land. In 1967, though, the situation changed completely. Not only did the State of Israel now control the site, but many among Israeli public took an interest in the Western Wall, visited it, and desired to share its national as well as its religious symbolism.